Welcome back, everybody, to the Cave of Solitude, your pop culture and comic book podcast, coming to you from the megacity metropolis of Toronto. I am your host, Eric Anthony. Thank you, everybody, for downloading and tuning in. If my count is correct, this is episode 217. And for this episode, I'm very, very happy to welcome for the first time and welcome back some familiar voices and new voices. So the voice that you will know has been on the show a few times, recently with Casey Parsons. We did a whole episode talking about our favorite Hulk story, and that is the illustrious, the kickstarting Mr. Sam Noir. Sam, welcome back to the show.
Thanks for having me back. I always dig the conversation around here, so this is exciting to chit-chat some more.
Yes, this is exciting because we're going to be talking about another Kickstarter that you are teaming up with our new guest. Legend has it that this man has stared down a bear and lived to tell the story. It's Mr. Andy Dorlin. Andy, welcome to the show for the first time. How's it going?
It's going good, Dan. Yeah, thanks for having me. It is true. I can get into that later, but killed by a bear. It's true.
We got to hear that. I do a little bit of digging when I have someone on for the first time. Have a few sources at Raid now that I can ask questions to, so they give me a little bit of the dirt to get into stuff for later. But guys, thank you for coming on to the show. You guys both have a Kickstarter that has launched, and you've reached your goal as we record this, right?
Yes.
Congratulations.
It's incredible.
That's awesome. Why don't you guys get into telling me about, or telling the audience, the premise of the story, what's going to be special about this in comparison to other Kickstarters that people can back. Whoever wants to begin, go for it.
Well, I'll jump in with the story part first, and then I'll pass it off to Andrew to talk about how we technologically enhanced the storytelling. But essentially, it is about a hidden community of fairies that exists in Ireland, and how a washed-up pub owner is blackmailed into becoming their human agent. Amongst the fairies, the fairy creatures and the fairy folk is a killer, and it is up to our reluctant hero, to find this killer in the community with the aid of a punk rock leprechaun and a shape-shifting creature known as a puka.
Very, very interesting. Was this a story that you guys had come up with together, or was it something that was an idea from someone else and you guys kind of mashed up and collaborated on the germ of an idea? How did that occur?
This is all Andrew. Basically, he is of Irish descent, I think is a proper way to say this.
Yeah, it's fine. Yeah, like a while back, but yeah, like essentially, it all started in my. We have like a really old house on Lake Ontario, and when I was growing up, my great grandma had a bunch of old Irish mythology books on the bookshelf, so I used to pick them up there and read off her old books. So that's like where the seed got planted, and then I had it all kind of plotted out. But then in COVID, me and Sam teamed up, and I said loosely plots, and I'm not a writer and terrible with dialogue and stuff like that. So handed it off to Sam, and then Sam made it a million times better than I could have made it for sure, and rewrapped the story and spun things around, made it way better, and we're off to the races. Yeah, it's awesome.
That's the
Andrew,
beauty.
Sorry.
Go ahead, Sam.
I was going to say, Andrew's just being very modest. Basically, he had very fully formed characters in there, very well-defined characters that I found quite inspiring. And he had a plot outline that he handed me. We were the two new guys at Raid at the time, tabling. And how long were we there? We arrived within a week or so of each other, right?
Yeah, I think you're here, I think, a week or two before I got here, and then, like, lockdown started, like, a week after I got here, so I flew back from living in Ireland for 2 years and then straight into lockdown, so, yeah, it was interesting.
And, the studio basically emptied out, and as we sort of, got to know each other over the few weeks of lockdown, at some point, I believe, we started talking about your passion for Irish mythology and those books that you grew up with, and the fact that you had this really well thought out pitch that you all, it had art, it had, I think, what, 8 pages of already drawn?
Yeah.
As well, so it really sort of captured my imagination, and I've always wanted to do sort of a contemporary fantasy. I'm not I don't like sort of what we call, I guess, traditional sort of fantasy with you know, set in period with quests and dwarves and going for, like, I like Lord of the Rings well enough, but all the sort of trappings of that genre versus something more contemporary, which this was what Andrew was going for. As soon as I saw the illustration for the punk rock leprechaun, I was all in.
So yeah, go ahead, Andrew.
Yeah, I was just gonna say, just to give you some context, it's kind of set in the 80s, so like kind of in that punk new wave kind of time frame kind of thing. I just wanted that because I didn't want to deal with cell phones and all that kind of nonsense, and so it's so much better in the story. But as well, like, as I just said, it was like, just to double up on it, because I was living in Ireland for 2 years previous, so I had the story idea, but then when I was actually living there, then I was able to, like, make it way more authentic, wrap it up. Like, I wrote most of it while sitting in a pub in Ireland in Kilkenny, and then actually used that pub as the basics, like, for the pub in the story. And then on top of that, my girlfriend is from Ireland, and then so we've utilized her to kind of do some editing with the dialogue. So, you know, we just write it. Sam writes all the dialogue like he normally would, and then I pass it off to her, and then she's like, no, like, I would never say it that way. Like, change that around. And then I'm careful on it, too. Like, we talked to Sam back and forth about this a lot because we didn't want to alienate North American readers. I don't know if you ever saw, like, Declan Shelby's Savage Town.
No.
Ever checked that out?
No, I haven't yet.
It's good. It's awesome. I would recommend anyone want to check that out. But he wrote it straight up, like, he's from Limerick, I think. Well, he lives in Dublin. I'm not too sure where he grew up, but the story's from Limerick, and he wrote it straight phonetically, like how they'd speak there. And I saw some people were kind of like, I didn't have a problem with it, but some people were a little confused, I think, when they read it from a North America standpoint. So I just kept that in mind, I think, you know. Me and Sam back and forth were like, are people going to get this or what? So, yeah.
Yeah. And I think, like, guys like Garth Ennis did it well with his Irish, because, you know, Garth Ennis is from Ireland. So, and he's got a real ear for dialects and stuff. And he's able to do it phonetically with a lot of his different characters. But yeah, for us, just trying to find that balance between, you know, shall we say, quote unquote, plain English, and then utilizing, what a wonderful resource Andrew's girlfriend is for just letting us know what is appropriate and what an Irish audience would say or understand or not use certain terms.
Right. And it's a fine, I guess, a balancing act to, like you were saying, Andrew, about you based it off a place that you were. And there's a certain level of authenticity having been there and lived in that space. And then when you're going to write it, you also want it to sound like what it sounded like in those spaces. But like you're saying, guys, to not alienate people who wouldn't be able to catch on to it. I mean, if you read it, I think at some point in time you'll be able to catch it. But for some, they wouldn't want to maybe put that investment in. So it's a good thing that you caught both of those aspects of it, which will probably make it that authenticity, but also be able to have that reach, which I think is a fine balancing act. I think it'll work out based on what you guys are saying, and the resource of having your girlfriend is invaluable as well. So you guys were saying about the characters. Now, the little bit that I've heard you describe and what I've read a little bit about them, they're very cool looking design characters, but also flushed out characters, like you know who they are from the start. Can you describe some of them, who the main players are in the story?
Sure. Do you want to?
Again, like I said, they came really well fleshed out. Like, essentially our sort of reluctant hero is a sort of burly, old school kind of burnt out, I think is the right word. He's been a pub owner sort of all his life and just not necessarily ready when the call to action, so to speak, comes. He's sort of a former rugby player who's sort of living on past glory. So it's interesting to see a character like this sort of thrust into this role and suddenly encounter a world he's unprepared for. The village has been under an enchantment for centuries, and the fairies essentially live amongst them. So for the scales to suddenly fall off his eyes and realize that all these people he's known for years and that he's sort of grown up with aren't who they seem is quite disorienting. And on top of that, being given a mission is quite overwhelming. So part of the fun is to find this sort of blustery character, basically, and not quite bumbling, but feeling his way through this and finding, you know, the compassion and heroism inside himself. In terms of his supporting cast, it's actually quite fun in terms of this punk rock leprechaun. There's a lot of cliches. I think this opened my eyes up, especially once Andrew started talking about leprechauns and doing my own research. He's not your stereotypical leprechaun, and in fact, a lot of the tropes were playing against, especially, you know, you see the image of someone who just loves, you know, Johnny Rotten and the Sex Pistols and all this, and gets a little bent out of shape when folks don't realize part of the leprechaun thing is shoes. Shoes is a leprechaun thing. Leprechauns don't necessarily wear green. They traditionally wore red, for example. So yeah, he's sort of constantly confronted with these sort of stereotypes and being sort of punk rockish, he's always railing against. And I feel like
I was just going to jump in there for a second.
Yeah, sure.
Just to expand it. So Johnny's the leprechaun. I thought, like, the big thing in my mind when I was coming up with him at the very beginning was there's so much that Irish trope is, like, put on, especially, like, tourists when they show up to Ireland. I was always really careful, too, of, like, everyone wants to be Irish and, like, the projections of what they think all that stuff is. So then I was thought, like, okay, it's perfect to take the most Irish thing possible in their minds and then just flip the whole thing on its head that he's super in love with America. I'm sorry to say, I missed this. I'd have to look it up now. I feel bad that I don't remember. There's an old Tibetan movie that there's a Tibetan monk and he grows up and all he wants is to be American. He has all these American posters on his wall. So I took some inspiration from that as well. This is a great movie. I should look it up. I'll let you know later, but not to ruin the rest of the movie, but it's great. All right, we'll go back to the sidebar, but yeah.
No worries. I actually think I've seen that movie. We'll have to figure that out together because it sounds like
He's waiting for a bus for the most of the movie on the road.
That's right.
Yeah, it's super good, but anyway, yeah.
Well, how about you tell us about the druid character? We haven't talked too much about Babbins.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, okay, sure. Yeah, Babbins is actually based on he's a traditional actual druid in like traditional folklore, but he's kind of like a super mystic. But in this, I kind of did some spin on it and worked because the druids, especially in the research, they're not necessarily good or bad, and they have these weird resurrection trees too. They used to hang dead bodies from and things like that they find. And we've kind of spun that around that he does have a dark past. He's kind of that mysterious trope, but he's kind of in the background. You don't really know what he was up to. And we're going to flash things, kind of what happened with him previously. But now he's kind of, you know, doing his little bit of redemption, but also a bit of a trickster. But kind of a, you know, I like drawing him like a nice, fun-loving country farmer. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So he doesn't have any of that, like, appeal of any darkness on him. But as you get into the story and read it more and what the driving factors of what's going on, then I think... Then I think everyone will come to really enjoy his backstory and who he is. for sure.
And you get little hints of it as well. I think one of the main images we've been promoting is sort of a flashback that we kind of hint at what his past is. He's basically cradling the body of a child amidst a battlefield of fairy creatures that have been slaughtered. So we don't get too much into his past history. We hint at it, but there is a larger story arc, as Andrew mentioned, a redemptive arc that he's attempting here. Whether, you know, the level of success of that remains to be seen, but it is sort of exciting to have a character that's a little darker and a little grayer than you'd expect, especially someone who's sort of lived so long.
Mm-hmm. Right. And then you have, I'm just looking at the website here, guys. Don't mind my eyes. Yeah. Focus somewhere
no
else.
No worries, no worries.
But you also have Molly. Tell me about Molly, the character.
Sure. Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So Molly she's a school teacher. She's a little bit of an enigma to give too much information about, because she's kind of she's definitely a core element of the story. Yeah, she's like a new school teacher to the area. She's very caring. And you're going to see different sides for her. She's going to be someone that's tricky. I can't say too much about Molly. I think readers will have to find out a lot of stuff when you find out. She does play a little bit of a love interest, I'd say, in the story, but that's not super clear either. But she's very strong-willed deep down, but you'll have to, I'm not going to say too much about Molly on the outside. I think that's a big secret and big thing for readers to find out as they dive into the story, but yeah.
And then I see that there's an animal character here as well, Clive.
Yeah.
Which
so that's the shape-shifting Pooka.
Okay.
So in Irish mythology, there's almost sort of a shape-shifting, and it's the archetype, right, of a sort of trickster shape-shifter creature. And I think it would be accurate to say, Andrew, that the Pooka was sort of the least fleshed-out aspect of the pitch.
Yeah, I think I went on his like character look more than I like when you know, I think I drew him a bunch of times, but didn't really have much fleshed out. So you kind of ran with him a lot more than I had anything really fleshed out too much for him.
Mm-hmm. I basically, you know, you saw well part of one of my all time favorite movies is Jimmy Stewart's Harvey, and Harvey is a Pooka. Basically, the premise of this movie is Jimmy Stewart may or may not have a best friend that's an invisible six-foot rabbit, and sort of the a gentle comedy that spawns out for that in terms of is Harvey real or isn't he real, and does it really matter? So that being sort of one of my favorite stories, I kind of decided to take the Pooka character and crank it up a little bit. And for me, the joy of this character is for one, you're familiar with my work, Eric, and so you know I kind of like to add a sort of gonzo comedy element. And without giving too much away, in a future, in one of the next couple of issues, there's a very, I guess folks who are familiar with their work might call it a very typical Sam Noir moment of crazy comedy that I can't wait for people to get to. I just imagined when Andrew, like I was trying to entertain Andrew as well, and I feel like, at least for me, I had a laugh out loud moment and hope to entertain Andrew in sort of the same way, but then also finding the emotion and the pathos of this character as well, because it's always sort of the comical, gruff characters that have sort of the most baggage. So he's got a lot of hidden pain and a lot of hidden depth amidst this sort of comedy relief that he's often played for. So,
right. Well, I love the character design of everybody that I'm looking at. They feel like real characters, almost as though you base them off of people that you saw or people that you might know. I don't know if that's correct, but when I look at Rory, even Johnny, and definitely Molly, they look like people that you were inspired by, Andy. Is that correct?
Yeah, for sure. Like, even his name is pretty much direct. The look of Rory, just his appearance, is my favorite rugby player of all time, Rory Best.
Okay, so, there you go.
Yeah, so he's an actual, he looks like him, but the his attitude and everything is more of a like a mix of all of the other kind of bartenders I was kind of talking to and chatting to, and I was hanging out drinking pints. So I kind of mix them all together. That's like the thing. Like most of the time, they're not like they're nice, but they're not going to go out of their way to be super nice to you. You know, like hey, what do you want? Here you go. You know what I mean? Like that's the thing. If you don't order anything ridiculous, like I just imagined in the story, like someone trying to order a cocktail off Rory in the pub, and he's just gonna like that's not gonna go over well, you know. He's pretty grumbly. Mm-hmm. So just stuff like that. Yeah, that was kind of so I hang out. Yeah, to give you some backstory, he's Benji was the barman that he's kind of mainly based off of. And if you're ever in Kilkenny in Ireland, there's a in the city to Kilkenny, there's a pub named the Tossel. And it's literally like a little strip, and it's all crooked, and like the toilet has like a there's like a screwdriver downstairs. You go down these big stairs, but Benji's awesome, and he'll like serve you and everything. And it's just all dark. It's more of like a rugby. It's a straight up rugby pub, and to the point that tourists would stop and they stick their head in, and then they just like back out the door. They're like, I'm not gonna go in there, and they just keep going.
That place is too real.
There's no music. Yeah. There's like there's no music in there ever. There's only sound if there's like a big game on and stuff like that. So I took huge inspiration from him for sure. And then the rest of the people kind of picking up from here and there from people I met from traveling around. Yeah.
So the story sounds like it's I could be wrong and maybe you guys have a plan ahead, but it seems like not just a single issue story. It doesn't seem like it's a story contained in 22 pages. How long? What's the plan for getting this story fleshed out? Is it something that's going to be 4 issues, or is it, you know, a 60-page issue to start off with?
It's a planned 4-issue miniseries, and actually, as we were sort of under production, there's sort of a lot of there's a few loose plot threads, and a side story came to me that I sort of pitched to Andrew that he went along with and hopefully liked based on another, I think it was a conversation about another mythical creature.
Yeah,
as well.
Yeah. I think we can say what it is.
Yeah, but it's a banshee story, essentially. And I think, again, because I had my preconceived notions of what a banshee was based on, you know, I'll admit this, the X-Men.
And, me too.
So I started writing it on that basis. But then Andrew pointed out that a banshee actually is quite different. And the wail is all about impending death. And for me, that just sort of hooked my imagination. And also there was, we're leaping way ahead, but there were a few loose ends. Basically, all 4 issues are more or less written and ready to go and a fairly solid graphic novel. But there were a few loose ends that actually seemed to fit perfectly with this banshee character that we'll be introducing, I guess, in a one-shot. So altogether, yeah, the 4 and then maybe plus this one shot would in fact make a really very satisfying self-contained graphic novel.
That's awesome. And yeah. Go ahead, Andrew.
Oh, I was just going to say, like, I think it's just fun for people. If anyone's interested in any Irish mythology in this, like we were planning, I want to like sneak in a bunch of stuff. So there's actually like the name of the pub, I'm using actual traditional Irish language in some of the sections, and we'll explain it, like the readers won't be lost, but like the pub is Madra Mor, so it means just the big dog. And then even banshee, just if anyone's interested, is a banshee shay, like the she on banshee is fairy, and ban is a woman, so it just means fairy woman. Like, so a lot of stuff's lost in like the translation for a lot of people. So it's just neat, I think, any readers that are interested in just mythology in general, but also how it links back to a traditional language. You try to weave as much of that kind of stuff into the story, and I think it's just fun for readers if you're, yeah, just to learn all that kind of stuff, where it comes from, all that kind of jazz.
Yeah, for sure. I mean, that's part of the fun with the hobbies that we have, it takes you into so many different worlds, right? You learn about Norse mythology, now with, in this case, Irish mythology, and you see somewhat of the connecting threads, but also where things change in history. So it's, you're always learning something, even in these mediums of comic books. You know, people think, oh, you guys are just reading cartoons, but it isn't, because you can really get some, sneak in some depth, especially with the use of language, like you just explained right there. Like Sam, I know Banshee from the X-Men, and I think there's a Superman character. Is there a Superman
villain?
Silver
Banshee, yeah.
Silver Banshee, right? And again, that sounds more closer to what you've described a Banshee is, right? A fairy woman or a woman with that ability to scream, as opposed to the X-Men version of it. So just now I've learned something, so thank you.
This is the other thing that I've sort of... And when we say fairy, I think most people, it sort of pops into their mind and sort of a Tinkerbell kind of like winged fairy.
Sure.
But fairy is actually a whole sort of classification. Andrew can correct me if I'm mistaken, but a whole classification of creatures. Is that correct, Andrew?
Yeah, so you just broke up there for a second. But yeah, it's the whole like, it's essentially like, it's the underworld people. So it's like, I was joking around this about with my mom. She came to visit and I was staying in Ireland, and they have fairy rings. So there's like a mound, and there'll be a trees in like a perfect circle, usually in a field. And she's like, oh, I'm going to go and like, you know, get blessed by the fairies. Like, she had no idea what I'm like, no, mom, if you step into that ring, you will die. Like, that's usually the thing, you won't escape alive. So she has this whole so again, it's like playing on that, you know, notion that people get confused about what it actually means. So a lot of them are bad, and usually in tradition, like, they just don't want to mess with them. Like, you want to keep them happy, but you don't want to mess with them. They don't, yeah, generally they don't have wings. Sometimes they fly around and do stuff, or they're a little bit smaller than humans, but they can be as big as normal people and all that kind of thing. I always think of like a good representation, I thought, looking back, was actually in Hellboy 2, because they live underground and they're all like fairies. So that has a ton of Irish mythology kind of stuff worn in, like woven into it, but just the size and the elvish warrior kind of jazz. But yeah, it's very different, but still kind of cool.
So what
I absolutely love,
ahead.
I absolutely love the fact that we're playing with people's expectations, essentially. Like, there has been sort of a Disney, let's call it a Disneyfication, mm-hmm. of a lot of this mythology, especially, you know, as we were saying earlier, it's there's a lot of tourism sort of around leprechauns and fairies, whereas as Andrew's been sort of introducing me to the concepts, a lot of them are much darker and morose and frightening than you'd expect. So we really, really want to play on those aspects.
That's very cool.
Yeah.
What would you say to recommend this book to someone? If they like fill in the blank, this would be right up their alley. Is there something comparable to it in regards to, like you said before, Sam, it has that fantasy element, but it's in a contemporary lens. What kind of people would be attracted to this?
Well, I'm personally, there's a lot of fantasy comics these days,
yeah,
that don't sort of fit into that sort of traditional fantasy vein that we think of in terms of the stereotypical sort of D&D trappings. But I think we were talking about this earlier. Sandman was a huge touch point for me in terms of things I experienced that were like, this is what fantasy can be, and this is how it can relate to the contemporary world in terms of all these sort of older contexts. There's stuff like Saga that's considered sort of contemporary fantasy. A lot of these are Image books, actually, now that I think about it. Wicked and Divine is wonderful. The Once and Future is another terrific book. Even Bone. I think Bone is a wonderful modern feeling fantasy, even though it's sort of an all ages kind of thing. It doesn't feel like an old fairy tale at all.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Those are all good. I guess connective type of ideas to get a scope of where this story what it can be and where it can go. The one very interesting thing about this particular project is the augmented reality feature to the comic book, which is not very common for most people buying a comic. I mean, I know Marvel did it a couple of years ago. I never really used it that much. But in this case, explain how it complements and adds to the storytelling experience.
Yeah, sure. You can talk about that. I was laughing when you said Marvel, Eric, because it's like, you remember it was such a pain to even pull your phone. You're like, oh, yeah, AR. And then you pull it, it's like, tells you like a sentence about something. Like, yeah, back in issue 3, you're like, this is terrible. Yeah. So with that in mind, I knew that going into creating this whole thing. Because I was like, I wanted to make sure it's worthwhile to actually push your phone or your tablet or whatever it is and point it at the page. So what I've done was I don't even remember how it came about. I just had a dream, and then it was like, I think I can do this. And then I started working on the app and then animating. So what I use is Blender. I don't know if you're familiar with anyone that's using Blender at all. So Blender is actually a 3D software program. So what I've been doing is using Blender. Like the little town that we have, I actually have it built in Blender in a 3D environment. So it has like looks like a little pop-up picture book, essentially. But it actually affects lighting and everything. And so I can actually run a camera in 3D space to actually animate. And so the whole thing's hand-drawn animation as far as the animating goes, but I can actually work it in a 3D space. So when you point your phone or your tablet at the page, it'll automatically start playing the animation. And I'm building on some extra features as well, but right now it's essentially it'll animate the page. Sometimes the panels will link together and like a character will hop over the panels or something will happen, or it'll literally play like almost like a movie of what's happening and transition into that page. But yeah, I've been using Blender, so everything's hand-drawn and there's sound and effects and everything. And yeah, it worked out. Works great so far. Yeah, so again, so pretty much like a whole cartoon, but again, we're making it so you don't need it is a big thing too. So you don't need to do any of this to enjoy the comic. But if you do want to turn the comic into an awesome cartoon and get even more backstory of what's happening, maybe some secret stuff on characters. We have, as Sam mentioned, there's a spell on the town, right? So people might not look like fays or fairies everywhere, but we're going to have like fairy visions. So some pages you pull up the phone, and then it reveals who is kind of a hidden creature here and there and all this stuff, fun stuff. I have a ton of fun so far with that. The brownies are a fun character in the story that work the bar. So brownies are supposed to be very helpful. They're supposed to be cleaning everything, but we made it like these are the worst brownies ever. So they're constantly just drinking and like dropping glasses and breaking stuff and making Rory's life even harder than solving any of the tasks they're supposed to be doing. So I'm having fun with sneaking them into a lot of the animations and running around and doing goofy stuff in the background. But yeah, that's it. So all you gotta do is download the app. You just open it up. There's a little instruction button. You point the app at the page, and the animations will just start running automatically. Depending on what we hit in the Kickstarter, and I think I'll be able to do it regardless because I've already implemented it in the back kind of right now while all this stuff's going on. And so I've made a D&D monster manual button. So when you hold up the app to pages, you can actually click on the button and it'll pop up a screen over top and it'll just give you like background information on whatever creature or mythology monster or whatever's on the page. So you can have like, yeah, we're going to have tons of fun with that. Me and Sam were talking about this already. Just straight up, we just love the old D&D monster manual. So have all the backstory stuff, like even like power level or cool stuff like that, you know, kind of fun stuff for everyone to give you. Just extra bonus stuff that will make the comic even better, a ton of fun, a lot of little secret stuff that I want to hide and, you know, just give the reader a real incentive to pull out the phone and enjoy the animations and get all that backstory and cool stuff that you can kind of figure out for yourself.
Yeah, that sounds awesome.
And this is a scoop for you, Eric, in that I don't think we've revealed publicly this monster manual aspect of it. I think Andrew just figured this out a few days ago, had a eureka moment, came running over to me in the studio, and then we just had a joyful moment after he figured this out. So
that's fantastic. Yeah. It kind of sounds like the app, becomes, you can get a DVD or a Blu-ray disc, and the Blu-ray disc will have those extra features to go along with the movie watching experience. Or in the case of even like for us who collect comics and read stuff, you could get, you know, the single issue, but when you buy the trade, you're going to get the script or some bonus features that add to, or even issues that may have been missing where you didn't read that, but now it's going to be included in this, you know, deluxe edition format. So you get all of the story if you want to. So it could read just as this thing, but if you really want to expand and get the full story, the bonus issues will be here with the app, which it's appealing because it just makes the reading experience so much more interactive, but the book still stands on its own, which is a really cool idea. I like that.
Yeah, we came up with basically, I think all four scripts were written first, so that we did sort of have a cohesive sort of beginning, middle, and end, and character arcs, et cetera, et cetera. And at a certain point, Andrew sort of discovered. Andrew is a storyboard artist and also does animatics, correct? So he had figured out this technology and could apply it to our story. And we had a look at a lot of other sort of AR comics and noticed essentially it was used for novelty. Right. You know, you'd get a little bit of, like, the panel would animate slightly. You might get some audio, some special effects, some sound effects. So what we call, I'm doing finger quotes here, motion comics. And again, I think a lot of people have kind of described ours as motion comics, but it's actually beyond that. Andrew, being an animator, has basically created entire, I guess, cut scenes,
right,
that are animated. And so for us, it was the storytelling. As novel as this is, and as much as you can read the story on its own, as you were saying, Eric, we really, really wanted to give the reader something a little extra. So in terms of, you see on the demo, I think you used the demo earlier.
Yeah.
Basically, our splash page is the druid cradling the child in the battlefield. And it's such a mysterious image. And Andrew went, and again, this is very labor intensive as well, but he was so excited by the technology and the story that he did actually go back and animate the battle itself leading into that scene. So you do get a little bit of extra in there. There's quite a few where you're given a little more. You don't need to, but you're just given a little extra.
There's a payoff, right? And what I think the interesting thing that you said, Sam, is that the story was written. You're not forcing the AR to make the story work. The story is the story; it works, but it's labor intensive. But it sounds like a labor of love. Like Andy wants to do this to add to it. Like it's hard work, but it's enjoyable and the payoff will be worthwhile, which I think is different from when you're trying to force it and the story is dependent on this working, and then if it fails, it's just a bad experience overall, which I think is a good way to approach it, by saying the story is done. It stands on its own two feet.
It's just they have, and like, hey, where's your starting point? It's like going to see a movie that has like amazing special effects, but then the story sucks. So it's just like, it won't make up for it, right? So like the starting point was never like, look what we can do. It's more like, okay, let's start from the heart. And like, what do we actually love about storytelling and comics, and go from there, you know?
Yeah. And that really informs all the decisions with the AR as well, I feel like. Like, Andrew is just so visually motivated, but he's also very much in tune with that, who these characters are and how the story plays out with these characters. So, just all of a sudden, the expressions and the body language and all of that sort of come to life. It's fantastic, actually, working with someone who is in the animation industry and sort of brings that to a comics project.
Right. Well, it's real special too that under the circumstances of the pandemic and how where we would normally be inspired and creative, you guys were able to meet each other and collaborate on this very special project that it's reached its goal. It's successful. That perhaps, I mean, you would never say, well, at least we got this out of it, but it's always exciting to see positive things come out of what's been, you know, a bad year for most everybody. So when you guys started working together, can you kind of like describe for us how you realized you were just right for this project to collaborate together? Was it just a matter of circumstance? You're here, I'm here, let's do something to pass the time? Or what was it that made the collaboration just right?
So it started with pizza.
That's the right answer. That's
Eric
it.
Eric knows this.
it's kind of one of those things that just worked out perfectly. Yeah, mm-hmm. I think we did start chatting over pizza, but it's like a classic thing of just even being in the space at Raid is naturally we're going to have similarities, like comics being the heart of it, like the main thing. So I think just start bouncing ideas back and forth, and then you know, the more you chat back and forth, you make a connection, you start building trust between each other, and then, like, hey, I wrote this thing, what do you think? And then kind of just works out from there perfect. So I'm sure even if it wasn't lockdown, we would have made it, but just because lockdown happened at the same time just made it perfect for sure.
Yeah. What are some of the tiers that people can get for the Kickstarter, the different goals that they can buy into?
So we got your classic ones. Well, you know, we have some variant covers that are super awesome. Mm-hmm. I have one that I did. We have one by Shane Heron, who's here at the studio with us. And he's got an awesome, super awesome cover that's exclusive to the Kickstarter as well. So I encourage anyone to go check that one out. My variant's a little kind of like a Jaws kind of tribute. I use some Jaws lettering and kind of stuff, but it has the monsters kind of featured on the cover of the book. And so everyone can go check that one out. You can get some exclusive, I opened up my commission list. So if anyone wants a deal, you get a pretty good deal on some commission art by me if you want a headshot or a full body kind of stuff. And then super exclusive, there's only, I think, three left. And I'm just working on some samples for it, but we're going to have augmented reality portraits on there. So there's only, like I said, there's three left on there. So essentially with that, I'll do a portrait of whoever you want and then also animate it. So when you pull up the app, then I think of like Hogwarts or something, but you can pretty much make whatever you want happen with you on there. And so I actually started one for you, Sam, today. I started that, so I'm going to make Sam fight people as a samurai. So you can pretty much do whatever you want. the sky's the limit. I don't know how long, it won't be super long, but still it'll be pretty neat if you like that kind of Harry Potter moving, or that idea of just having a cool portrait and then it come to life. It's pretty neat. What else we got, Sam?
It applies to all our swag more or less, because I think there's prints. If you get the basic tier, you get two mini prints anyways, and these mini prints are both augmented reality. So you use the app, you put it over the prints, and something happens. We have regular print tiers, slightly larger. T-shirts, I think, is two kinds, right? The baseball and the regular, where, again, you can be wearing this T-shirt or a mask. We live in COVID times, so an add-on is we've got masks with the characters on it. So on the T-shirts, the mask, we've got one tier where socks are exclusive. So all of these animate, which is a lot of fun, and they all come in a collector's box, which, again, also animates. I think, it's even some of the original art, because it's based on the pages that we've animated, so you can buy original art that you hang on your wall as original art, but you put your phone up to it and the animation, the same animations in the comic will activate on the screen as well. The other thing, cool. Actually this also ties in with your question in terms of our working relationship and how we sort of started. I just remembered this. Not only did it start with pizza, but there's an 8-page bonus story that when we reach, I think the first stretch goal is $5,000. So as a digital reward, we're at, I think we're only what, like $500 or $600 away from that goal or something like that?
Yeah, something like that, yeah.
Yeah, so already we're well on our way. So you'll receive this exclusive 8-page story, and I think part of the experiment too, like this was the very first page you did in augmented reality in this short 8-pager we did, right?
Yeah, it was the test. Yeah, it was the first test page.
Yeah, so even this one has augmented reality elements. And then our stretch goal, when we reach, I think it's 10,000, we will add the story to the print version. And in terms of our relationship, I had even kind of slipped my mind. We worked on this 8-pager, and I honestly really felt like there was some chemistry there in terms of us being on the same page about the type of stories we wanted to tell and how we sort of visualized the stories. And actually, you took whatever I was imagining and turned it up to 11. It was incredible. Sometimes you'll do, you know, a crowd scene and you feel bad drawing this crowd scene for the artist. So I always like give the artist an out, for example. You know, you can say, oh, it's a crowd scene, but you can do most people in silhouette. You know, as long as we see the main characters in this and give an indication, Andrew draws the whole darn battlefield. And that was indicated from the start. So, and again, I won't lie either. 2020 has been a tough year for everybody. And it was, especially being under lockdown. And it was nice having a place to come to every day just to see, you know, one or two other human beings, even though Andrew and I were at like opposite, like the studio is huge and we're at opposite ends of the studio. And I think, yeah, we agreed at some point that we just were under lockdown anyways. Let's try doing this short together. And I was so thrilled with how the short turned out. And I think that's how we graduated, I guess, to
Yeah, and you know, I'll even say too, like the short, so if we do hit that stretch goal, it's in there, but the short it's a standalone story, but it's in the world of Ballet Skillin' still, so it's a play on another Irish myth, but it's wrapped up in the same thing, so we can have fun plans later to make a cool crossover of how that's going to work, but yeah, it worked out perfect because it does fit right in there, and yeah, it's perfect. I was gonna say too, just the t-shirts and stuff are neat. The other exclusive t-shirt that I had was, I don't know if you're familiar with any of the old Guinness posters. It's like Guinness for strength and all this stuff.
Okay.
I've never seen those there, but yeah, so I did a little play on that kind of thing and have it like animate so you can actually point at someone's shirt and then they'll actually animate on their chest or whatever you want. So yeah, so it should be pretty fun. Like I said, they look cool. You don't need to do that when you constantly walk around pointing at things. So,
I want one now. Just, yeah, that sounds
it's
awesome.
A cool thing. Yeah. The Clive shirt, we haven't showed it anywhere, but I have Clive. He does a bunch of Irish dancing. So then it's, you'll actually start dancing across your chest back and forth and do funny stuff. So it's pretty fun. Yeah, it's cool.
And we have that as a mask and as socks as well.
Yeah.
Very nice. Well,
and the one other thing, Andrew has commission slots left. So head commissions and figure commissions, and his stuff is amazing. I'm always astounded that he puts so much work, so much extra work into it. And often it's not just even a figure too. You'll do the whole background.
Yeah, usually there. I like putting people in a scene, so they're not just floating. But yeah,
Which some artists resist that for even just their figure work, but Andrew always does 200% easily into everything he does. Like you see it in this book, he didn't have to do such elaborate animations, but he went ahead and did it. And I think we're even at that point, because we've been saying like every 500 in terms of on top of the on top of, now that we've met our goal, every 500 is an extra page of augmented reality. But I feel like you're already well on your way to doing more than that anyways. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I'm sure. Like, I'll just keep going, but as long as we have enough time. But yeah, I'm enjoying the whole thing, so it's not too bad at all. But yeah, it all runs at...
I was just going to say, the other great thing is the app can be constantly updated as well. So even when the comic's released, I would suggest, over time, we do have some ambitions for it, especially we're eventually going to collect this into a trade. So, the Monster Manual is just sort of one feature we would work into there. And this is something we would probably constantly, over the course of this series, be adding to. So don't be afraid to go back at certain points. We'll probably announce updates as to, added more stuff. And then people can, the fun of it might be to go in and try to find the stuff that we've added.
Right, right. Well, based on what you've said, Sam, about Andrew's art, the pages that I've seen on both the website for the Valeskillen as well as on your Facebook, you take no shortcuts. Like, you really do put all that detail in there that, like you said, Sam, it's rare that people... It's not to say that other artists don't. Other artists definitely do. But just on even stuff you do for fun, that commission you did with the Transformers that you posted, it's just beautiful.
Oh, thanks, man.
One was just a small image, but then when you expand it and see the whole thing, it's just full of detail. And it makes me excited for the book, because even in the splash page where I use the AR on it, it was impressive of how much is in that shot itself, and then to add the animation to it, it's worth the money, because a lot of times, you know what, people are always questioning what to support, especially when you go to comic cons, right? Everyone's selling something and you really want to get the best bang for your buck. So when you see that an artist is putting his all into it, it's encouraging to know that you're getting good quality. So for sure, I agree with Sam on that.
Cool. Thanks a lot, Eric. That's really nice. Yeah, for sure. I was just, I've been buying comics for years, so I always want to, I know when you're handing over that cash or whatever, you want to get something good, you know? So I think everyone deserves that for sure.
For sure.
Mm-hmm. And remembering it's not just the physical object, because again, Andrew and I sort of went back and forth between the price point of a regular comic, and we kind of realized, it's not necessarily competitive with a comic you get in the comic store, but in terms of all the extras, like just the labor of the animation alone, I think is worth the price tag.
Yeah, I would agree with that for sure. Andy, since it's your first time on the show, I usually do a little bit of a background with somebody who's come on for the first time. So I want to take a moment to just get a little bit of your backstory. When did you fall in love with the medium of comic books?
It would have been a long, long time ago. I forget now. I just looked it up. I think my first comic, I would have been six years old or something like that. It was a Todd McFarlane Spidey Sabretooth. I think it was like 324 or something, Amazing Spider-Man. Yeah. Something like that anyway. So that was like your thing. It's kind of the classic story. Like, I couldn't even read, kind of just reading through the pictures, flipping through. Mm-hmm. But funny story, like, I still remember this day. I was freaking out because my mom wouldn't let me get, there was an old, it was Spider-Man again, but it was Spidey fighting Scorpion. And Mary Jane was in it, but she wouldn't let me get it because Mary Jane was in lingerie. And she's like, you're not getting that.
Yeah, it's Todd McFarlane era for sure.
As a kid. Yeah. And as a kid, like, you don't care. I'm like, I just want to see the fighting. Like, I just want Scorpion in there fighting. But so that's kind of like where the whole thing started. So, yeah, I'm kind of, I guess a little bit before the beginning of the 90s kind of thing. So the X-Men cartoon and that, all that stuff, that time frame would have been huge for me. Huge Moon Knight guy. I have complete old Moon Knight run and all that kind of stuff. So what else? Yeah, that's just, picked up too much to even ramble off on, but that's how I got into the whole thing anyway.
Were there artists that maybe now or even back then that inspired you to want to pursue that as a career or to be a comic book artist, or in your case, a storyboard artist? What can you think of any of those names that just triggered that light bulb in your head?
Yeah, for sure. So like it's really funny when you get older, like the stuff I didn't even realize, of course, like I was, like I just said, like the huge Moon Knight guy. And then later on, like I'm a big Ron Garney fan for art wise. And then I look back and I didn't even realize till later that all that stuff I was reading, I was a huge fan of Ron Garney's stuff on Moon Knight. Like there's all cool Spider-Man Hobgoblin crossover stuff that was going on in there. And his sense of action, like there's some panels that have like, yeah, just the action and the motion and everything that was in those panels like always blew me away. So there's a lot of stuff like that when I was a kid. I didn't even know. Actually, he used to be at the studio, but Kerry Norda, I really like his work and some of the Conan stuff. But similar kind of thing is, do you remember he got to start to have all the Mutant X comics when they had like the other dimension stuff? So I was big into all that stuff and then didn't realize till later that he was drawing all that stuff. So there's a lot of cool kind of like, you know, throwbacks that I didn't realize till later. But even currently, like I've been, you know, said this a ton of times now, but Dan Pinotian's stuff is really cool to me now. He's got some not self-published, but his creator-owned stuff, Slots, is a pretty awesome book. I recommend everyone go check that one out. Storytelling and his art, and I think he even did the colors and everything on it, so it's really awesome.
So, yeah, it's true. Yeah. When you mention the kind of like a visual library that we develop with certain things that we're drawn to, and I remember for so long I wasn't paying as close attention to the credits, because after a while, as a kid and then even as a teenager, you just see like that's Superman, or that's just how Batman is drawn. It's a little bit different, but it's the character. Yeah. And then you start to have that preference. And I noticed it maybe the first time, I didn't pay attention to credits, but I remember in the Death of Superman trade that came out, it had all the different artists in there. So you saw as you switched from issue to issue that the art changed a little bit. And I for some reason, enjoyed looking at the Adventures of Superman issue, which was Tom Grummett. And then when I remember looking at Robin comics, I'm like, I like the way this looks and feels. And I didn't register at the time that it was the same person. So I totally get what you mean when you go back and you realize, oh, that's all Kerry Nord. I love Kerry Nord on X-O Manowar. It's one of my favorite books. He's tremendous. Yeah.
Yeah, for sure. Yeah, I think it's great. Like, I think it's like you're just saying, like, it's cool how some stuff just speaks to you and you don't even know why.
Yeah.
You know, and you'll just like pick up stuff. It's amazing, even when they had like more of a house style, that you can still pick out stuff. Like, why? So a lot of times you won't even know. You're like, why is that so cool? But, you know, later on you can figure it out. Yeah, it's awesome. That's why I think everyone falls in love with it eventually. And it's just something special. But even a line, somehow someone does a line that's like, how is that so perfect? I hate that person now. When you're an artist and you end up hating, like, how do they do it? I hate you. But yeah, it's awesome.
Yeah, I started to be able to tell George Perez by the way that he drew women's hair so detailed, like he could get curls in so tight in such a small panel, and you knew it was him. It's like, how does someone do that and take the time to do it? So yeah, I get it. You moved to Ireland, you said, for 2 years. What made you embark on that adventure? Was it just the desire to live out there? Was it work related?
Yeah, so even like I was saying before, like, so I had like a connection to it growing up from all the books and stuff. So that was always with me for a long time. And then I went on a trip once, just there for, I think it was only like 11 days or something like that. But, you know, you have like almost like a sense of a home away from home. Like I just felt so comfortable with all the stuff. I didn't feel like I was even traveling so much. Minus like learning all the slang and not knowing some stuff that people were saying. But besides that, it was all good. So I fell in love with the West Coast like crazy. So I recommend anyone that goes there, just stay in Dublin for like a day and then just get out of there and just go straight to the West Coast. If you like, you know, the ocean and mountains and stuff like that. But I just kind of, it was time in my life that I sold my house actually in Thunder Bay and then end up traveling for, I think it was 3 or 4 months across Europe and stuff. So I spent a bunch of time in Ireland, and then I went to the Alps in France and worked, was able to like freelance and stuff, and met a guy that has an eco farm and hung out there for a while. And then I went to Scotland, I went to England, and was just freelancing, kind of living it up, traveling around and doing my thing. So it's pretty awesome. And then I met my girlfriend now in Ireland, and then I ended up going back and then get my visa, and then went back there to be with her for the next like 2 years. So yeah, so it all worked out pretty awesome, but that was it.
So when you answered that call to adventure, how old were you when you left Thunder Bay?
I think I'm 37 now. I think I was 34, 35, somewhere in there. Be a good 3 years now, because I was gone for two and a half, doing the math, something like that. Be close to 3 years for sure now, yeah. So, yeah. Yeah, we're 25, 35 or so. Yeah, so I had a whole life before all that stuff for a long time. So, yeah.
So what changed when you did travel? Like, was there something that you learned along the way as you saw all these different, Europe is very different from North America. There's similarities because you see that a lot of our cities are just based on what they originally did. They pull a lot of things from, you know, and I went to Madrid. I felt like, oh, this is kind of the way they built this city, and you can't really get lost in it. It kind of feels like Manhattan, how they have a grid where you always will be able to find your way. And architecture-wise, you start to see similarities. But what was it living there? Or even traveling for those 3-4 months where you were working that, you know, changed you. Can you think of anything specifically? Or not specifically?
Totally. I think the thing that stands out the most to me that I can tell you for sure was probably just because I spent the most time in Ireland. But even in France, I got this sense too. It was way bigger language barrier, so I didn't get as much, except for the guys I was hanging out with. But in Ireland, I think before I even was traveling, I was always like trying, like a lot of people, I'm like, I gotta get this done, I gotta do this, I gotta get to point A to point B, and like if I'm not this successful or whatever I'm doing. So like I was out at a pub with a bunch of the guys, and this time I was waiting for Larian Studios. Is like a big game studio. They did Divinity and stuff like that, so I had a chance to work with them, and I was waiting to hear back from them. And everyone was asking, what are you doing? And I was in between jobs. And instead of just saying, oh, I'm just in between jobs, I went on this whole thing like, oh, I'm going to get this. I'm going to work for this thing, right? And so the whole night, they just made fun of me so hard because they're like, no one cares. No one cares. So just hang out, have a pint, and just, you know, you're just a human being. Like, no one cares what you're doing. And so even that whole mentality of, like, just be cool and, like, stop trying to rush or get to point A to point B. It's the cliche, like, it's the journey thing, but they're actually living it for the most part there, and no one will even ask you. No one's impressed by whatever you're doing or whatever it is. So it's just such a down-to-earth thing, and even when you get up to the farmlands in the West Coast, I found that even more. Like, it's even worse. They'll just slag you about it. Like, they'll just make fun of you if you try to pull any of that stuff. So it really just knocks you right down. And so I just love all that kind of stuff. After I see it, I was like, oh, this is great. Like, you just get to be yourself and hang out, and it's perfect. So
it keeps you humble.
I love it.
Yeah. I think it was talking with, the name escapes me now and I'm so upset, Sean Daly, where he said that, I forgot where he had traveled to, if it was in Holland, but somewhere in Europe, and I know that you had mentioned on the True North podcast that the comic scene in Dublin is pretty strong, but that the appreciation that the folks in Europe had for the artwork and to really pay attention to it, like there is a certain level of humility about it, of how down to earth they were, but also how they interacted with the art. From what you're describing, it's they're not so impressed with you necessarily, but they have an appreciation for they're impressed with you as a person, not so much what you do. Is that correct?
Yeah, I would say that for sure. Like, it's kind of a weird kind of back and forth, I guess, because, like, you know, poetry and writing is such a huge thing there, and even the Celtic, like, designs, the Book of Celts, like, art is a huge thing, actors, everything, right? So that is revered in the whole the whole realm of things. But yeah, somehow it's still, it's like, yes, do that pursuit, but just don't, like, enjoy that as your expression, but it doesn't make you different or, you know, just even trying to reach a special goal. It's okay, yeah, do your creation, express yourself, but then it kind of ends there.
That, right.
Like, I could totally, that's the sense I got anyways, and that's kind of what the feeling I was kind of there with friends and things like that. So I think it's pretty neat. Like, you know, especially back in Toronto, like, there's a little more of a hustle bustle and everyone's kind of more, I guess it's like competition. Like, there's less of a competition if you try to be, I know it's like this in Scotland too. You know, if you try to be anything, if you try to puff yourself up, they're so fast just to knock you down hard. Yeah. Like, so I just, it's fun. I like that kind of thing.
So question for both of you guys now. How has it been as far as the creative juices go, being at Raid Studio, surrounded by so much talent and creative people? How has it affected you guys? Obviously, in regards to this project, you guys have been killing it. But for both of you, how has it benefited you?
There's a creative energy in the air, isn't there?
Yeah.
Like, you come in and basically, even if you're not necessarily, from the moment you come in, like, people are here working, they're creating, and even if you're not necessarily aware of what everyone else is doing, especially during COVID times, we're a little spread out. I think Andrew's sort of more in the artist area, and I tend to sort of isolate a little in the back, but you can't help but feel that and sit down and apply it. I write every day now. It's astonishing to me. It's amazing. I had been in a studio previously and had just really, really missed it. And even when we were under lockdown, I think there were, like, you know, three of us here, and you still felt that.
Yeah, that's so good. It's important, I feel, when I think inspiration and creativity inspires more creativity. I don't think you can have one without the other. I don't. How about for you, Andrew?
Yeah, totally. Like, I was freelancing, you know, from home previous to this for a long time. This is my first, like, studio space I got to join, mm-hmm. And so having, like, such a talented group of people around you, and even if you have a question, like hey, like, I'm having a hard time with this hand, or, you know, I don't know, whatever it is. Yeah, you can just, like, lean over and ask and get feedback or whatever's going on. Just beyond that, it's like working from home, there's so much more distraction. And like you're saying, the inspiration, the bouncing back. So if you're sitting there drawing and you look over and, like, that guy's still drawing, like, there's a lot of times, like, I would just stay here. Sam saw, like, I'll stay here super late, if, like, especially if Ramon's still here drawing or whoever, you know, like, it's just so much easier just to keep working. It's not even like it's not like a competition thing at all. It's just like, oh, they're still here. I'm not alone doing this. Like, they understand what you're doing. That's mm-hmm. another big thing too, right? If you're at home, like, your parents would be like, whoever it is, I'm thinking of kids, but yeah, your parents would be like, hey, you're still doing that? Like, why don't you take a break and watch a movie or something, right? But no one's going to say that to you here. Everyone would be like, yeah, just keep drawing, like, whatever. That's what you do.
So, yeah. You get to enter the zone, and other people understand that.
Well, you come in and you blink. Like, I find you sit down, you start working, you blink. Hours have passed. Like, and this is me we're talking to, Eric. You know this. I'll forget to eat sometimes. I'm so into my thing, you know what I mean? Whatever I'm working on, there are times when you just completely lose track of time, and then all of a sudden it's like, I'm starving. What time is it?
That's hilarious. For Sam to forget to eat, that his head must really be down in his work, and he must be really inspired. So I have
it's
to ask.
At that point, I call over to Andrew. Hey, Andrew, you want? I'm going to go get a pizza. Share it with me.
Yeah, for sure.
So, Andrew, I have to ask, tell me about the staring down the bear.
So previous to doing freelance stuff, I went to school on Thunder Bay, like, up north. I don't know if anyone knows where that is, but
Oh, you just cut out.
A little slow for a second.
Oh, so yeah, good? You're back.
Okay. So I was up there, and my whole family is from a forestry background. Okay. So I ended up doing a bunch of tree planting. I don't know if it, so tree planting is like, some people get confused. You're planting little trees. They're like, they're not that big. Like I would take 300 to 400 trees at a time when I walk out to the woods. So it's like all down anyway. But yeah, so I've done a ton of those crazy forestry jobs, but in this particular story, I was doing some tree planting stuff. I was taking a little bathroom break by some trees, and as they do in the woods, there's I looked up and there's just a black bear looking at me. And you know the dogs do a little, you know dogs do the little head tilt thing.
Yep, definitely.
So it did, yeah, it did one of those because 90% of the time they just run away. But this, he did one of those kind of things. Then he decided, hey, I'm gonna charge this guy. So he ran at me full speed and stopped like. Yeah, about a meter or two away. It's called bluff charging, so they actually hit the ground like and go crazy. And so yeah, so during the span of him running at me, it's like kind of you know, all the adrenaline is just dumping into you. And I'm just like going big, like, okay, I'm gonna have to fight this thing, like I'm definitely gonna lose. But you know,
did you have another bathroom break after the bathroom break?
Yeah, bathroom break, worst bathroom break ever. And it was funny because people could hear me. I didn't even realize, but like I was yelling stupid things, like I was telling him to go home. So I'm like, this is his home. It's a bad story. the other one I yelled was like, what's your favorite color? I was like, I don't know why, like what's your favorite color? I don't know. So stuff like that. I've done a ton of stuff that, like, I used to get flown in helicopters, like, super far north and dropped off and cut down trees with axes and stuff. So I've run into a bunch of bears, but only, yeah, I had one other one that charged me as well. But besides that, it's probably, yeah, over 90% of them run away, so it's all right.
So what's the protocol if somebody were camping, let's say, and they come face-to-face with a black bear? Do you just start yelling back at it, or how do you make
as long as it's a black bear, I'll give you the bear rundown.
Yeah, give me the bear rundown. I mean, I never go camping, but you never know, just in case.
If it's a black bear, you want to make yourself big, right? So in this case, I had a shovel, so I'd like raise the shovel above my head and make you look like a big gorilla or something, you know, and then you yell and make a lot of noise. But you definitely don't do that with a brown bear or a grizzly bear because they'll just come and murder you immediately. And you want to play dead.
So every time was a black bear, not a brown or a grizzly bear.
Yeah, because I'm in Ontario, so that's all that's here. You don't have to worry about the other ones. Yeah.
Jeez, that's crazy. I mean...
But, yeah, there's 10% of them. We're getting to some bear talk here. There's like 10% of them are predatory, so you have to watch out for the 10% of the black bears. Like we had a guy that we were working with, and one stalked them all day long. He had like a machete. He actually had to swim into like a river thing, and it was still coming after him, and he quit. He quit after he's like, I'm never going back after that. But it was literally a good 8 hours of the bear just following him. Yeah, the other way.
He's like the Terminator of bears.
Yeah.
He's a Baronator. Yeah.
Good for you, man. I don't know what I mean, I love animals, but if I was in the wild, then if I saw a fox, I would probably be scared shitless. So good on you, man, keeping it together and being able to live to tell the story. Sam, you ever encounter bears in the wild?
Not at all. I don't get out into the wild that often, so.
Me neither.
Just deer.
So, gentlemen, what do, for people who are listening and want to support the Kickstarter, when does it end? And give me a little bit more info where they can go to support and follow everything.
Campaign ends on November 5th. So they've got a few weeks to go. They can find out more at ballyskillen.com, ballyskillen.com. I spelled that right, Andy? Andrew?
Yeah, you got it.
And they can find us, they can type the same thing into Facebook or Kickstarter.
And if anyone wants an easy thing, even if you don't want, if also just myname.com, right on the homepage is the link to Ballyskillen, so you can go there. as well.
Awesome. And if people want any commissions from you, Andrew, they just go to your website, anything like that, to reach out to you?
Yeah, you can go to the website, and then I'd recommend just while the campaign's going on for the Kickstarter, you might as well just go on the Kickstarter, because it's a deal on the Kickstarter, so if you directly do it on me, it's going to be more expensive anyway. So
right.
I recommend just go to Kickstarter, and you can get a good deal for yourself.
Awesome. And Sam, of course, you've got the Cauldron number 4. That is a huge success, but the Kickstarter is still up, right? That
one's still up? It's up until, I think, Monday, I believe. We've got about 5 days left. Depending on where
this will be when up, this is this will be up on
It'll
Thursday.
Be a weekend. You've got the weekend back it.
That's great. Well, I'm real happy for you guys, and I'm really looking forward to this issue being in my hands and then seeing it as a graphic novel. And I hope to have both you guys on soon again, where we can just talk about comics and fan stuff and all that fun stuff.
Absolutely. And Andrew's in the contributed to the latest. He's contributed a pinup to the latest Cauldron as well.
That's right. So there you go, folks. You get Andy Dorlin on the Cauldron, Sam Noir on the Cauldron, as well as the Ballyskillin. It's good. I'm really happy for you guys and for the success. Amidst all of the bad news, there's a lot of good things happening with especially local creators. It's so nice to see everybody succeeding right now at their endeavors, so that's good. Thank you guys for reaching out and giving me that exclusive news about the AR that we didn't know about before. I appreciate it.
No problem. I'll give you a little special bear sketch in your issue of Ballyskillin there for you, Eric.
All right. Thanks, guys. I appreciate it. Everybody, thank you for listening, and make sure you support these Kickstarters.
A pleasure as always, Eric. Thank you.
All right, guys.